welcome to Catholic Views. I'm Renee Kranz. Today we'll be talking to Father Michael Kapperman, one of the newly ordained priests for the diocese, and we will find out all about his call to the priesthood and what he's most looking forward to as a priest. First, we are going to check out the scripture readings for this week and find out what Biblical Bites with Dr. B has to say about them.
Yes, let's find out what Biblical Bites with Dr. B has to say about them.
That is a little bit of a tongue twister.
I know, Biblical Bites with Dr. B.
It's awesome.
The person you need is Nanny McPhee. That's another story.
Yeah.
It's a good story. Have you seen that story?
No.
Okay, never time. We don't have time.
No, not today.
How are you, Renee?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. So, do you know what today is, Renee? It's Trinity Sunday. See, I'm just going to answer my questions to you.
Because I like it when you answer them.
Trinity Sunday. My oldest, actually, our oldest was born on Trinity Sunday.
Oh.
Her birthday is next Saturday, but, you know, because Trinity Sunday is always on Sunday. Anyway.
Gotcha.
So I was looking at the readings, and so if you're listening and if you've been to, maybe been to Mass or watched Mass already, or you haven't yet, pay attention if you haven't yet to the readings, because there's something very unusual that happens today in the readings for Mass that rarely happens, well, in general, let alone on Sundays.
Okay.
The responsorial psalm, Renee, is not a psalm. The responsorial psalm reading at Mass is not a psalm today.
Okay. What is it?
Every now and then, other sort of psalm-like, so we're frankly, they're hymns. So other psalm-like passages are used instead of a responsorial psalm, and today is one of them. And today, the responsorial, I mean, you wouldn't have heard this because for psalms we don't do, the psalm, responsorial psalm today comes from Psalm 27.
Right.
Today, the responsorial, quote-unquote, psalm was from the book of Daniel, chapter 3. The book of Daniel, chapter 3. I really want to ask you questions.
You can ask me questions. That's fine.
So when you think of the book of Daniel, Renee, what comes to mind?
The lion. Daniel in the lion's den.
Right. Yep. Anything else?
You can say his long hair.
I think that's Samson.
You
that's
asked
Samson.
Me. Does oh, that's have... right. See, this is why you shouldn't ask me questions.
So Daniel in lion's den. So larger context for Daniel. The book of Daniel talks about Daniel. So Daniel is, Daniel was taken along with other members of the royal family into captivity in Babylon around the year 605 BC.
Okay.
So Jerusalem is besieged, conquered, and Nebuchadnezzar takes Daniel, the king of Judea, and members of the royal family, the royal court, and vessels from the temple back to Babylon.
Okay.
So Daniel is one of those. Daniel, along with many others, but three others who are named early on, Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael. Have you ever heard of Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael?
It doesn't sound familiar.
So they were also, like Daniel, they were renamed. When they were in Babylon, they were very skilled administrators, leaders. So they actually were appointed. These four men, among others, Daniel, Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael, were appointed to various positions of responsibility and power in the Babylonian kingdom. Okay? But they're renamed.
Okay.
So they had Hebrew names, but for purposes of working in the Babylonian temple, they were renamed. I think Daniel was like Belteshazzar or something like that. But Hananiah was renamed Shadrach. Mishael was renamed Meshach, and Azariah was renamed Abednego.
I thought maybe the names would get easier to say, but
Shadrach,
they didn't.
Meshach, and Abednego. See, now so there's a whole VeggieTales about this. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are the three young men, Hananiah, Azariah, Mishael, who are thrown into the fiery furnace.
Yep.
Why were they thrown in the fiery furnace? Because Nebuchadnezzar had erected a 90-foot tall gold statue. And so basically, when the music plays, you bow. The music played, and Hananiah, Azariah, Mishael, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refused to bow.
They said no.
So we know the story, right? So the king, Have the furnace stoked seven times hotter than ever. Have the mightiest men bind them and throw the furnace got so hot that the men responsible for throwing Hananiah, Azariah, Mishael into the furnace themselves were died because of the furnace. So it was they're thrown into the furnace. And do you remember anything of the story?
I remember that they were singing and praising God while they were in there.
And that is what the responsorial, quote unquote, psalm is taken from
for
today. Is that part of their song?
Okay.
Where they're praising God because they're realizing, oh, hey, look, we're not being burned. Like, they didn't know that was going to happen.
Right.
They didn't know that God was going to work this incredible miracle.
They
thought they were going to their death. Yeah. Here's the thing to remember. They came from... again, from Jerusalem, they've been taken captivity. And this would be sort of like, and I know this doesn't work for the younger listeners to our audience, but it worked for us and those older. This is like World War III actually happening during the Cold War, and it'd be like you and I being taken captive by the Soviets and taken back to Moscow, and we're put in positions in Moscow or in Moscow. So Hananiah, Azariah, Mishael, Daniel, and all these others are taken captive from Jerusalem. The temple's been destroyed. They can no longer worship in the temple because, first of all, the temple's destroyed, and secondly, it's way back. They're not there. So they don't have any way to complete their full worship, and so now they're offering worship in the form of what they think is martyrdom. They've been called to do false worship. They don't. They refuse to worship falsely. They said, we're going to kill you. So be it. We would rather undergo what we now call martyrdom than worship in the false cult of your false gods.
And they could see at that moment that was probably going to be a terrible death.
Right. Exactly.
And they did it anyway.
Where these other guys who like died from, whether burned or the heat itself, who knows. So these three young men would rather, they couldn't worship in temple. They'd rather die themselves. They're thrown into the furnace. And God saves them, and they sing this incredible song of praise, which I didn't quote from. There's no time to today, but that's what happens. They give praise and glory to God, and that's what we see happening in the responsorial psalm, song of the three young men.
Very cool. Great stuff, Dr. B.
Thanks.
All right, let's move on to our interview. My guest today on Catholic Views is the newly ordained Father Michael Kapperman. Good morning, Father Kapperman.
Good morning.
How are you?
Doing really good.
Good.
A beautiful June day, and
it is. It's June.
It's hard to believe it's already June.
Yeah. What do we need to call you? Have you decided yet? Are you Father Michael, Father Kapperman? Is it Father Cappy? I hear a Cappy is a nickname.
I've already been called six different names just in my short time of ordination. There's a Father Michael, a Father Mike, a Father Kapperman, a Father Cappy, a Father Cap, and I even got a Frappy.
One of my son's friends
sent me a Frappy with a Frappuccino image.
Oh, that's awesome.
Congrats, Frappy. And so,
that might stick now. You said it on the radio.
I know, it's permanently on here. No.
So you are fresh off of ordination.
Yes, the oils are still radiating on the hands. So,
have you had time to process what you've just done?
In some ways, yes. In some ways, no. As I reflect back on like the last week from ordination, it's been so quick. I mean, ordination was on Friday. I had first masses. I actually had four masses this past weekend. Saturday morning, first mass of Thanksgiving. Saturday evening, I surprised my grandparents down in Beersford. They were having mass offered for their 65th.
I bet they loved that.
Oh, yeah. It was hard to keep this secret from my grandparents. They kept asking if I was coming down for it. I'm like, I don't know. I got this big mass I need to get to on Saturday night. I'll see if I can make it. Granted, the big mass was that mass. So,
yep.
And then Sunday we celebrated two public masses for the parishioners at St. George. And then this last week, just, you know, getting things solidified, writing thank you notes. It's been hectic, but next week I'll be down at Broomtree, taking some days of retreat and just spending time in silence and reflecting on, what the Lord has just done in my life.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Yes and no. There's been some time of reflection.
There
will be more time. Absolutely.
Good. What was the most memorable part of the day of ordination for you?
I'm always moved by the presentation of the candidates. So it's the moment in the liturgy where the deacon will stand and call forward those to be ordained. Mm-hmm. And then the in our diocese, the vocation director petitions the bishop to ordain these men. And so it's this moment where the church asks the bishop to ordain this man a priest. And I'm always struck by it. The last 2 years, it's been the most moving part of the liturgy because here gathered in the cathedral are all my friends, my families, those that I've shared Christ with, those that I've shared moments of joy and moments of suffering. And they stand in front of the Lord and ask him to ordain me a priest. And it's just so humbling to see so many faces that have loved me throughout the years just asking the Lord to ordain me, asking the Lord to make me a priest. And it's so moving to have so many people just say, "Michael, you are good, and we ask the Lord to ordain you." It's like, how can you stand in front of that reality and not be just humbled?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
We
even
did
now,
notice.
Even now, tears are coming.
Well, so. We noticed in the video booth, I guess you'd call it, the TV mass booth, mm-hmm. When we were recording, that you had a bit of an emotional time there.
Yeah.
So we were like, oh boy, look at him. He's really feeling it right there.
Yeah, absolutely. This year, I remembered to bring Kleenexes in my pocket. Last year, I was like, oh no, I forgot. This is not going to be good. But yeah, it was very moving. And in that moment, just surrendering to the emotions and just letting them come, because they were tears of joy from the Lord, tears of gratitude. So not fighting them and just letting them come.
Yep. And it makes it a moving moment for everyone who's watching and who's there. So it was a good thing.
Absolutely.
Thanks for doing it.
Yes.
Where did you say your first Mass after?
It was St. George in Hartford. So I grew up just south of town in Hartford, went to St. George all my life. The parishioners there are my friends, my family. So I got to celebrate Mass there on Saturday, what was that, May 30th at 10 in the morning for about 75 to 100 people with social distancing, of course.
Yeah.
But got to celebrate Mass there. Celebrate Mass with some of the close priests, close friends. It's been it was a real gift of a day.
Good. Now, I know as a deacon this last year, you've done some homilies.
Yes.
Do you get nervous?
Not really. Because one of the things I've learned through homily and homily prep is you're preaching from your heart. You're preaching from what you've encountered. And what is it? I think it's First Peter that says, always be ready to give a reason for the joy that's within you or hope within you. I'm paraphrasing, of course.
Yep.
But when it comes to homilies, it's like, I'm just preaching what I've encountered with the Lord. And I'm certain of that. I'm certain that these things are true. I'm certain that the Lord truly loves his people. And so when I'm preaching, it's like, well, this is just what the Lord said. So it's up to him to determine what it is. But I'm just preaching from what I've encountered, what I've said. So with regards to nervousness, not so much.
Yeah. Do you write out your homilies, or do you, in the words of Bishop de Grude, let the Holy Spirit lead you?
Yes, both and.
Okay.
So usually at the beginning of the week, I'll start to meditate on the scriptures for the upcoming Sunday. And I just pray with it. And I pray with, like, what is the Lord trying to say to the people? I usually talk out loud. I love long road trips of weeks that I have to preach, because I just spend the whole road trip just talking out loud in my car. I'm sure if people saw me driving, they'd think I was crazy. But I usually, I just spend time just thinking out what the Lord wants to say to his people. But each day it's like a new check-in. So each day I'm like, is this still what you want? And I've had it before where it was like Saturday morning and I had to preach Saturday night. It's like, and the Lord just changes it all. So yeah, each day is a different check-in and just say, is this still what you want me to say to your people? And sometimes it's peace. Sometimes it's like, yep, what I've been praying about, what I've been thinking about the whole week is what he wants me to say. And then other weeks, it's like, well, nope, we're changing it. Saturday morning, here we go.
You better be on your toes with him, huh?
Yeah. He keeps me agile.
Yeah. That's a good thing. If you've just joined us, we're talking to Father Michael Kapperman, one of our newly ordained priests for the diocese. Father Kapperman, will you tell us about your call to the priesthood? How did that come about? What happened? Give us some details.
Yes. So I was I went up to college at Dakota State University, and I was studying math education. I also played football up there, and while I was up there, I fell into the typical college party scene. And then God, in his merciful love, allowed me to have a house party get busted.
Oh.
Yes, yes.
What?
Yes, I know. A storied past. But having that house party get busted, it just allowed me to reflect on life and just ask questions like, is this where I want to be? And then right about that time, in God's providence, he sent a friend into my life who invited me to go to the Newman Center. I said yes because there was going to be free food there.
Of course. Yes. You're a college student.
Absolutely.
You've been eating ramen for a week.
Yep. Yep. And so I went there, and lo and behold, I just met some people that they were convinced of the Lord's love and the truth of what the Lord's message is. And it got me thinking about the faith and how I've been living it out, and it convicted me. So I went back to confession, started reattending church again, and the Lord just captured my heart. He just moved me in so many ways. So I started praying every day, and in the midst of that prayer, I just desired to give everything to him. I just was like, Lord, how do you want me to live? I want to live as your disciple. And then he surprised me by showing me that the desire in my heart to give everything to him was fulfilled in the priesthood. It surprised me because it was the last thing on my mind. It was the farthest thing from what I wanted to be. I wanted to get married, have children, and live in Hartford. My whole dream was just to continue living in Hartford because I love that place. It's a wonderful town, wonderful community. But the Lord was placing on my he was showing me that this desire on my heart to give everything to him was only fulfilled in the priesthood. And after a couple months of wrestling, there came a moment of just surrender where it's like, yes, Lord, I trust you. Mm-hmm. I trust that I can only be fulfilled by giving myself in this way, giving myself to you completely, allowing you to be the only one who is allowed to enter to the inner chambers of my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was my junior year. My senior year, I started applying for seminary, and then I entered seminary right out of college back in 2014 up in St. Paul, and had been there ever since, and now left there to get ordained here.
Yep. So was it kind of a scary time when you were starting to hear that call?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a very scary time because, as you're growing up, you have a particular view of how your life will turn out. There's particular mm-hmm. things. It's like, by this age, I want to be roughly at this point. And for me, it was like, I want to teach at West Central. I want to coach at West Central. I want to raise a family, probably on an acreage near Hartford. Mm-hmm. I want to go to my parents' house every Sunday after church, you know? And it's like, that was what I was desiring. And for the Lord to upend it and give me a different path, it was like, what?
Yep.
No, I don't want that.
Yep. I don't know about you, but I've definitely learned in life that the Lord's path is not the same as ours usually.
Yes. Yes, and to turn us from our own path usually involves kicking and screaming on our part.
Very much so.
Yeah.
A lot of that. Is there any advice you would give to other young men who might be hearing that call right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My advice would be, like, what is it that you desire? What is it that you yearn for? And just to be clear and, like, list it out. It's like, yeah, you could desire a family. You could desire a particular job. You could desire a particular way of life. And just to list it out and then to say, Lord, I surrender this to you. And to have so clear the reason why you're surrendering it is because the Lord is the one who's captured your heart. And just to give it to him, because he might give it back. He might say, actually, I'm not calling you to the priesthood. Mm-hmm. I'm calling you to these things. I just desire you to see how it's first my love and then these things. Or in, like, with my case, he might show you that actually I have a different plan. My love is leading you to a new place. My love is leading you down a different path. And somehow in the mystery of providence, all of these things will be fulfilled in a new way.
Right.
So, yeah. Just to lay out before the Lord your desires, and then to trust that his love will, in his divine plan, fulfill every one of them according to his plan.
Right. That's great advice. Mm-hmm. Great job. What did your family think when you told them you were going to go to seminary?
Yeah. So by that point, when I told them I was going to seminary, it wasn't much of a surprise because a lot of things had changed in my life. But I think initially when they started seeing changes, started seeing me behave differently, I think it was there was a real sense of surprise, a real sense of like, huh, something's happening. Same thing with my college buddies, because I was still living in the houses with the ones that I had the house party get busted with. I mean, they were still good friends of mine. But there was just this recognition that something has changed in Michael's life. Something has changed in Cappy's life and has made him different. And seminary is just a continuation of whatever happened to him. So for a lot of them, it wasn't a surprise because they saw the trajectory beginning months before.
Yeah. And you're not the only boy in the family, so there's no worry about we're still going to get grandkids.
Yes. Right now I've got seven of them.
Yeah. Seven good. Already.
Munchkins.
Nieces and nephews. Good. Yep. And I know I have to set the record straight for your younger brother.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In the bulletin that will be coming out, or is out, we forgot to mention that you have a younger brother somehow in there. You do exist.
Yes. I thought that was so hilarious saying Michael's the youngest of three. Well, there's actually four. There's one younger. So
we missed him. I'm sorry. What's been the biggest blessing for you so far? I know it's been only a short time, but you've been a transitional deacon for a year. And what's been the biggest blessing for you?
Yeah, the biggest blessing has been just the ways that the Lord surprised me in like this continual walk. Like there's always something that just surprises me how much he loves me. So I remember in seminary desiring community, and it came in the most unexpected way. We have a man who for our diocese, Deacon Jacob Doty, he was just ordained a deacon. I was desiring community, and every day I took a nap at a particular time, and every day without fail, Deacon Jacob would knock on my door at that time and wake me up from my nap. And it took me a while to actually see, actually, this is the community that the Lord is providing for me. I would have never thought it came from him interrupting my nap every day.
Or maybe Jacob's just messing with
you. I could see that too. I could see that he's just messing with me. But it was such a surprising adventure. It's like, holy cow, Lord, this is how you fulfilled this desire. I did not see this one coming. And he just continues to surprise me. In the midst of ordination, in the midst of this last week, just surprising me how much people have been praying for me, how much people love me, and how much like this priesthood that the Lord's called me to is not just for me, but for the whole diocese. And to see the church, the local church built up because of what God is doing in my life is just so humbling. Mm-hmm. It's so humbling.
Yeah. Is there anything that maybe is a worry for you, is a something you're concerned about might not be it's so great? Anything that's come to mind yet?
Yeah, I'd say there's the continual worry of how, I guess this is the nature of humanity, is to how it's all going to play out. Mm. It's like I'm just embarking on this priesthood. And if I were just to look at the age of retirement, so to speak, for our diocese, which is 75, it's like, that's 47 years from now. It's like, what's going to happen in 47 years? Yeah. Like, I have no idea.
Yep.
And so the sense of worry is partly like, what is going to happen? Mm-hmm. I don't even know what I'm going to be doing like next week. I don't even know what next week or even tomorrow is going to look like. Mm-hmm. And then just to see before me, like this adventure that we're now on it's a little daunting, but whenever I stand before that daunting reality, I just return to the fact like it was his love that got me in here. It's this love that's continuing in my life, and it's his love that's leading me. And it's like, well, I guess I can surrender that.
Yeah. I can get on board with that, yeah. I guess. Good. What are you most looking forward to?
Yeah, the priestly community. One of the things that I loved about seminary is the fact that there's just so many men who are gathered together who are striving to be the disciples that God wants them to be, and to now get to live that out in this diocese. I'm looking forward to that, to just spend time with brother priests. Another thing I'm excited for is just to walk with people, just to be with people, get to walk with their families as their families grow and transition through different times of joys, times of struggles, and just to be in the way that Christ's love is present to me continuously, just to be present to families in that way, and just to show them that Christ too walks with them. Christ too loves them.
Mm-hmm. Good. Is there, I know a lot of times parishioners will invite their priests over for supper or take them over for supper. Are you ready for that?
I've actually been thinking, like, how am I going to, because I love having dinner at people's houses, mm-hmm. and it's one of the things of priesthood I'm looking forward to, because you just get to see the messiness mm-hmm. of family. You get to see, you know, kids crying, kids getting in trouble, all this stuff, and it's so fun. But in order to do that, it usually means that you're fed a lot, and so it's like, how am I going to keep, you know, the pant size still the same and not have to, you know, be constantly buying pants because I keep growing in the waistline. So,
well, there are worse problems to have, I suppose.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Then I guess we'll see Frappy running down the streets, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Get a little exercise.
Yep, you'll see me working out. So
that'll be good.
Yep.
Is there anything else that we can do as lay people to help? Help our priests, you, other priests. Are there some things that you've seen out there that we can do to help?
Yeah. First and foremost is prayer. Because the evil one obviously wants to just throw confusion in the life of the priest to get him off kiltered so that he starts to rely on worldly things, mm-hmm. Whether it be like, you know, checking the news or, just ways that the priest will turn to worldly things to rely on.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the laity, just to pray that he may only rely on Christ, that Christ may be his sure hope of faith, his sure hope of certainty. Just to pray for priests to rely on that and not on their own strength, not on the strength of any worldly means, I think is the greatest help. Because when a priest knows the love of Christ, as we were talking about earlier with the homily, he's going to mm-hmm. preach the love of Christ, and he's going to witness to the love of Christ. And for that, then he'll help build up the laity in their own vocation in the world for them to be able to see, well, it is the love of Christ that leads me on.
Very good. Very good advice. We'll do our best
yes.
to help you guys.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks for being with us today, Father Kapperman.
Yes.
I'm going to go with Father Kapperman for now.
There we go.
We'll see if it changes later.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for having me here. It was a real blessing.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a great conversation this morning. Father Kapperman is going to make a great priest. That's it for us today. Join us again next week for more Catholic Views. Mm-hmm.